Welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unresolved cases, and UK true crime. Today we are going to delve into a story that has had recent developments in the news just this month, but reaches all the way back over 100 years. The story of Mammy Stewart has so many twists and turns that it's almost impossible to keep up with it. From a tumultuous marriage to a mysterious disappearance and discovery, Mammy's case is bewildering, but above all, the sad loss of a 26-year-old is tragic. This episode contains descriptions that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is advised. Mammy Stewart was born in 1893 in Sunderland, in the northeast of England, close to Newcastle-upon-Tyne. She was described as a pretty girl with brown hair and grey eyes. She was known to be a confident and fun-loving young woman who enjoyed being on the stage and taking part in the performing arts. As she got older, this love turned into something that she wanted to pursue full-time, and she became a touring dancer, travelling around the country. It is reported in an article on Wales Online that she later created her own dance troupe called the Five Verona Girls. She had dreams and aspirations of being on the stage and performing, and this was clear in her dynamic personality. As she entered her 20s, the start of the First World War changed everyone's lives significantly. The public was now dealing with untold grief over the loss of loved ones, and everyone was still trying to adapt to a huge shift in their lifestyles. This also obviously affected Mammy and her dreams of being on stage. In 1917, she was back home in Sunderland, and it's reported that it was here that she first met George Shotton. George was older than Mammy at 37 years old, and worked as a marine engineer and surveyor. Due to the nature of his job, George had not been called up for service and travelled around the country. The pair hit it off immediately, and their enjoyment of travelling to different places ensured they had quite a lot in common. So much so that Mammy and George got married the next year on March 25th, 1918. The pair moved around to a few places after their wedding, living in Bristol, and then moving to several places in South Wales. From the outside, the marriage appeared to be going well, and throughout 1918 and 19, the pair continued to live life as a newly married couple, spending time in Wales and London. Mammy's family kept in touch with her, that is, until Christmas 1919. Mammy had sent a telegram to her parents, James and Jane, wishing them a Merry Christmas, and it's reported in the Wales Online article that she also suggested that they should come down to visit her sometime. This, however, was the last contact that they had with her. They replied to the telegram to her address in Caswell Bay on the Gower Peninsula in Swansea in Wales. However, they received a surprising reply. The letters were sent back with the message, "House closed," written on the front. While this was concerning and strange, Mammy's parents did not let anyone know about it at this time, and did not immediately go to the police. They were known to move around, and therefore this may not have been unusual for the couple. A few months went by without any more contact from Mammy. But it was in March 1920 that another surprising development was made. Staff members at the Grosvenor Hotel in Swansea had been holding onto a trunk that had been left unclaimed since the previous December. They decided that it was time to open it to see what might be inside, and to try and track down the possible owner. When the trunk was opened, it was clear that there were possessions that belonged to a woman inside. There were women's clothes and shoes inside the trunk. However, the strange part of this discovery is that the shoes were cut in half. There was also a piece of paper inside the trunk with an address on. When these items were investigated, it was found that the address linked back to a property in Sunderland. It was the home of James and Jane Stewart. This was quickly relayed back to Mammy's parents, who positively identified the items as belonging to their daughter. They were immediately concerned that something was wrong. The confusing part of the story was that the hotel staff did not think that the trunk was left by a female guest. They remembered that it had been left by a man. The contents of the trunk did not seem to correspond with what they knew about the events. How had Mammy's belongings ended up in this trunk in a hotel in Swansea? Why were some of the shoes cut in half? These were certainly baffling questions that needed some answers. But above all, the crucial question was, where was Mammy Stewart? The police became involved in the case after discovering that Mammy appeared to be missing and began in the usual way, by contacting her husband George Shotton. When they managed to track George down, he explained that he had not seen Mammy recently. He said he last saw her in Swansea in December 1919, but that the pair had had an argument and she had walked out on him. It is reported in the Scotsman newspaper in 1920 that he said he had not been to see her at the house in December or January and had not bothered to check on her. He maintained that he didn't know where she was. The most surprising thing that Shotton told police, however, was that he was not actually married to Mammy at all. They just lived together for a period of time. This was extremely unexpected for Swansea police, as they had been told by Mammy's family that they had been married in 1918 and that they were living together as husband and wife. This news was also a surprise for Mammy's family, who were under the impression that their daughter had been married in South Shields. While detectives continued to try and investigate more about George Shotton's life, they now knew that Mammy was not with him and decided to cast their net further afield. It's reported that they distributed a description of Mammy to the other police forces around the country and to the public in the hope that if someone saw her in another town or city, they would be able to let them know. It's reported in the Dundee Courier on the 1st of June 1920 that Mammy was described as 5'3" or 5'4" tall, with a profusion of dark brown hair which was worn bobbed. She was also described as having dark grey eyes, well built and always dressing smartly. The detectives could not rule out the possibility that some harm had come to Mammy and that foul play was involved. They decided to dig up the back garden of Shotton's home to check that Mammy had not been buried there after the reported argument that he said they'd had. This search, however, turned up no new evidence, and the police were drawing a blank at where she could possibly be. It was as though she had simply vanished into thin air. It did not take long for the investigation to uncover some important and suspicious new evidence in relation to George Shotton. After his explanation that he had never been married to Mammy at all, the detectives did some research and found out that the possible reason for this statement was because he had actually married someone before his marriage to Mammy in 1918. George actually had another wife whom he had married in 1905, and they had a child together. While the marriage ceremony had been very real in Mammy and her family's eyes, it was actually bigamous. This was a shocking turn of events in the case, and it ensured that the police looked even closer at George as a possible suspect. Not only had he lied to Mammy about his family situation, he had failed to disclose this crucial piece of evidence to the detectives. When confronted with the accusations of bigamy, George strongly denied them and said that while he did live with Mammy at various addresses, he was not married to her. This explanation, however, did not satisfy Swansea police. Although detectives could not find any evidence that George knew where Mammy was, they could arrest him on the charge of bigamy. Bigamy had been an offence for hundreds of years and still remains one today. During this time, however, bigamy was actually more common than imagined, and often families did not know that their loved ones had other lives outside of their marriage. Police arrested George on the charges of bigamy and apprehended him as he was getting off a train on May the 21st, 1920. It is reported that when he was arrested, he told Detective Sergeant Anan and Inspector Fox that there must be some mistake. When told the charge against him, he simply said, "I did not." When questioned about whether he had heard anything from Mammy, he answered no. The trial took place at Glamorgan Assizes at the end of July and was presided over by Mr. Justice Avery. Shotton continued to deny the charges and pleaded not guilty. The trial was unusual, as normally when a defendant was facing bigamy charges, they would be able to cross-examine the second wife or husband. In this case, they were unable to call Mammy, as she was of course still missing at the time of the trial. An article in the Western Mail on the 28th of July 1920 documented what happened at the trial. Sir Ellis Griffiths, KC, was prosecuting the case and was determined to display as much evidence as possible to the jury. Griffith explained that there were several pieces of evidence that pointed to Shotton's guilt, including the marriage licence and the entry in the registry book in South Shields. He stated that on these he was listed as George Shotton, 37 years of age and a marine superintendent. It said that he was living at the Golden Lion pub in South Shields at the time of the marriage and that his father was John Webb Shotton, a ship surveyor. Sir Griffiths compared these details to Shotton's first marriage entry to his other wife. In this he pointed out the similarities in his job title and his father's name and profession, stating that the difference in age was only a few months. Sir Griffiths then went on to explain that Shotton had also been living with Mammy at various addresses over the years. He said the couple first went to live at Elgin Court in London, where Mammy had been staying, and then proceeded to stay with Mrs. Brass, Mammy's sister in South Shields. Mrs. Brass explained that Mammy introduced Shotton as her husband, and he did not deny this at the time. They also stayed in Liverpool, and then at Mammy's parents' house, living as husband and wife. Witnesses were also called from the registry office to show evidence that Shotton had signed the register with his name and with his handwriting. Sir Griffiths also produced some quite interesting letters that Shotton had sent to Mammy and had been found in her belongings. These letters not only alluded to the fact that the couple were married, but also hinted that perhaps things were not completely happy in their relationship. One of the letters, which was much publicised at the time, read, "You asked to be free. Are you not free? More than any other girl, you wander to and fro at your own sweet will with no one to question you. I don't know in what manner I can do more. It does not lie in my power. I gave myself to you long ago, but you never seemed to care after a few short weeks. You flaunted me before your friends, but I did my best for you. I gave you my name and my love. You trifled with both, destroyed all my ambition and converted me into a wanderer." Another letter that was presented at trial contained a passage that stated clearly that they were husband and wife. It read, "Perhaps you now see it is not what you ought to do. It does not lie in my power. I am not intending to do the awful things that you suggest. I can only imagine that you want to lead me on the wrong path so that you can divorce me. Your place is at my side, and if you wish it, it is all in your power to make us both happy. I therefore scribe myself as in old times, your loving husband George." While it is not clear what was being referred to in the letters, as it was only a partial passage, it's evident that the couple were having problems, and that Shotton did believe that he was Mammy's husband. Sir Edward Marley Sampson, for the defence, produced some letters from Mammy that was intended to persuade the jury that she was of the character that would try and trick her family and friends that she had got married, when she actually hadn't. Shotton decided to give evidence in his own defence and took to the stand. He explained how he met Mammy, saying that he worked as a marine surveyor and naval architect, and that he had government work to do that would often take him away from his home at Caswell near Swansea. He explained that he had been conducting a survey on the Norwegian steamship Margot when he went out with the captain of the ship. He met Mammy and her friend while he was out, and as he put it, misconduct occurred. He then explained that he continued to see Mammy and cohabit with her at various hotels around the country. On the day of the registered marriage of the couple, he explained that he travelled from his office in Cardiff to South Shields via London and went to the Golden Lion Hotel. He said that he just happened to bump into Mammy and the pair checked in as Mr. and Mrs. Shotton. He stated that this was a coincidence and still maintained that the pair had not been married that day. He did not deny that he had stayed with her at various locations and met her family, however. He described the time that he last saw her, which he said was December the 5th or 6th. He said this was in Oxford Street in Swansea, and that the couple had had words, as he was not happy with the way she was conducting herself while she was staying at hotels. He said she told him she would be better off finding someone who could keep her better. He said that the couple had to tell others that they were husband and wife, otherwise they would not be able to get rooms at hotels. He maintained that even though he had seen her in December, he did not know where she was now. When asked about the marriage register entry, Shotton said that Mammy must have taken another man to the registry office and got that man to forge his own name. When asked if he knew where this man was now, he said he did not. Sir Griffiths produced some letters which seemed to suggest that Shotton may have been abusive towards Mammy, such as hitting her over the head. He denied this allegation. Shotton's wife, May, was called to the stand and she explained that her husband was frequently away from home, but that she did not have an inkling that this affair was happening, as he always seemed to have an explanation for his movements. Sir Edward Marley Simpson for the defence in his closing statements asserted that there was no direct evidence of the marriage, and that it was a remarkable case as there was no one to confirm whether the marriage had actually taken place, as Mammy was not available to interview. He continued to state that a determined effort had taken place on the part of the prosecution to poison the jury's minds to the belief Shotton had done away with Mammy. He also stated that there may be good reasons why Mammy had gone away, and shockingly at the trial he said that Mammy was thoroughly immoral and worthless in regards to her relationship with men. This comment clearly attempting to discredit Mammy completely. Sir Griffith said that it was a remarkable case, but that they could not ignore the law even though Mammy was not there to speak for herself. He once again reiterated that Shotton had acknowledged Mammy as his wife on various occasions and in his letters. He ended by saying that Shotton's story was impossible and incredible. At the end of the trial, the judge gave his opinion, asking the jury to only consider whether the evidence was enough to convict Shotton on the charges of bigamy. He once again went through the key points of evidence and pointed the jury to think carefully about it. It did not take long for the jury to return with a verdict. They had decided that George Shotton was guilty of the charges, and the judge sentenced him to 18 months imprisonment with hard labour. He added that if Shotton had pleaded guilty and took the proper course, he would have been more lenient. He stated that he believed Shotton had committed wicked perjury in the witness box and had given the jury very little credit for intelligence if he thought they would not challenge the story he had concocted. It's reported that George Shotton collapsed in the witness box at the news and had to be taken away. The trial had proven that George Shotton's relationship with Mammy Stewart was a close one, and that the pair had married and been cohabiting while Shotton was still married to another woman. This made their relationship quite precarious and in some ways made Mammy even more vulnerable. The problem for the detectives was despite their ability to prove that Shotton was a bigamist, they were unable to prove that he had anything to do with Mammy's disappearance. They had no evidence to prove that any harm had come to her, and they didn't have any leads to indicate where she might be. More importantly, they had nothing to suggest that Shotton had been the one to cause her any harm. In July, the same month as Shotton's trial, it's reported that Scotland Yard had become involved with the investigation into Mammy's disappearance. This proved difficult even for them, as the only piece of evidence that had been found so far was the trunk full of items that belonged to her. Contemporary articles state at the time that they were also following up a lead about a Canadian officer who was somehow linked to the case. However, this did not appear to give the detectives any solid evidence. Several years went by in the case, with Mammy's disappearance still remaining a mystery. There were some sightings of her reported to the police that were coming in from around the world. It's reported on Wales Online that the reports were coming in from Canada, Australia, South Africa and India. The India sighting actually came from Thomas James, a friend of Mammy's father, who was sure that he had seen her as part of a dancing troupe out there. He was so sure, he said, he could not be mistaken. The mystery, however, continued, and the investigation was soon decades old, with no one any of the wiser about where Mammy was. That was until November the 5th, 1961, more than 40 years after Mammy's disappearance. Three potholers were exploring a disused mine shaft near Brandy Cove on the Gower Peninsula. Brandy Cove is a small beach which is located on the wider peninsula, which became a designated area of outstanding beauty in 1956. It has a beautiful coastline that attracts many visitors each year. It was at this beautiful location, however, that these three men came across something unusual in 1961. As they travelled down a narrow tunnel that was just off the main shaft of the mine, they noticed something hidden behind a rock. When they looked behind it, they realised that it was a human skull and a pile of bones. When they looked closer, they discovered that there were also rings and other items of jewellery located in the same place. The police were immediately notified and set about examining the scene. Upon arrival, they realised that it would be a tricky area to excavate, as it was a very narrow tunnel. However, they did remove all necessary evidence, including the skull and the bones. All the evidence recovered from the scene were taken to be examined, and it was soon apparent that they had found the body of a woman. The skeleton was sent to be examined at the Home Office, but detectives immediately recalled Mammy Stewart's case. Despite the fact that she had disappeared more than 40 years before, her case had not been forgotten, and the eerie fact was that before she went missing, she was known to have been living less than half a mile away with George Shotton in Caswell Bay. This put Shotton once again on the police's radar. It did not take long for the Home Office to confirm that the bones were that of Mammy Stewart. The Home Office Forensic Science Laboratory were able to confirm that the bones belonged to her, and also confirmed that the bones were in many parts. Some of the bones appeared to have been sawn in two. The police were now investigating what they believed to be a 40-year-old murder case. They began by looking back into Mammy's life, and they found a witness who knew her and was able to confirm that the engagement and wedding ring that was found close to the body had been hers. They also quickly tried to track down her then-husband George Shotton, who was now their prime suspect, and had been in 1920 during his bigamy trial. This proved difficult initially, as they couldn't seem to find out where he was, until they unfortunately discovered that he had died 3 years earlier at a home for the elderly in Bristol. His first wife had divorced him after the trial, and he had left the area travelling around for some time as an odd job man. When police asked around at the home where he had lived, the residents there described Shotton as a perfect gentleman. However, this was not how the police saw him in 1919. They believed that he was indeed capable of committing the murder of his wife. An inquest was held in 1961 at Gowerton to establish what had happened to Mammy Stewart. This was an unusual inquest, as they would not normally be held at the time on bodies that were so decomposed. However, it was deemed necessary to get to the bottom of what happened. Scientists and medical professionals testified at the inquest to explain their findings. It's reported in the Newcastle Evening Chronicle on the 14th of December that Dr. W.R. Lester James, a Home Office pathologist, established that both upper arm bones, both shoulder blades, parts of the thoracic spine and two rib bones had been sawn through. Both thighs had also been sawn through, plus there were other small cuts to the arm bones and shoulder bones. James stated that an explanation for the small cuts was that there was flesh on the bones at the time of sawing, and hence several starts were made in the sawing, and successive saw cuts did not go into the original saw group. He also told the jury of seven that the cuts were made with the same saw. He said the victim was around 5 feet 4 inches tall and around 25 years of age, both features consistent with Mammy Stewart. As to the cause of death, however, this was much more difficult to establish, and James could not confirm how she'd died. He did rule out that there was no indication that she had been shot or strangled. He stated, "We can draw no conclusion on strangulation. If the person had been attacked by another person and the attack was to the skull, you would expect evidence on the skull, but there was none." Detective Constable Ken Noakes discussed that he had enlarged a photo of Mammy and made a large print of the skull. He placed this transparency over the skull and observed that all facial features appeared to line up. Lester James agreed with this assessment. He also added that placing a body in a natural catacomb, as the murderer had done, was a very clever way of disposing of a body. There were other witnesses called to discuss how they knew Mammy. However, the most damning testimony for Shotton's guilt came from former postman William Simons, who at the time was 83 years old. He delivered letters in the area and used to deliver them to Mammy and George when they lived in Caswell Bay. He recognised both of them when he saw them, however did not know them to speak to. One afternoon during the time that they were living there, he saw Shotton struggling with a large sack. He was attempting to take it out to a yellow van that he owned outside his home, but it was heavy. Mr. Simons asked if he could help Shotton with it, and he said that Shotton appeared panicked and said, "No, no, no, oh God, I thought it was a policeman." He said he watched as Shotton put the sack in the van and drove off in the direction of Brandy Cove. Mr. Simons said, "I did not know Mammy was missing at the time, and I did not report the incident to the police. Even after Mammy was reported missing, I didn't go to the police because I didn't think the incident had anything to do with her disappearance." This did appear to be damning testimony, however it now had to be looked at 40 years later to try and establish if it proved guilt or innocence on Shotton's part. The jury came to a decision and stated that they believed that the evidence proved that Mammy Stewart had been murdered and that George Shotton was responsible. They found, however, that there was not sufficient evidence to prove how and where she had been murdered, and that this would be difficult to establish as Shotton was now dead. After over 40 years, this appeared to bring about a conclusion to Mammy's case, and finally her family would be able to mourn for her. Sadly, this news came many years after Mammy's parents had died, and those that knew her had all aged significantly. Despite the closure that this verdict brought, it was not the end for Mammy's story. Her case once again hit the headlines just this month after a sad and surprising discovery. Mammy's great-niece, Susie Oldknoll, was contacted by the TV channel CBS Reality after they wanted to cover Mammy's story in a programme about unsolved murders. Following on from this contact, Susie was shocked to be told that Mammy's remains had never actually been buried, and since their discovery in 1961, they had been kept in a Cardiff forensic laboratory. Susie told the BBC, "So her story had gone from something finished to this. I'm not religious, but I thought it was awful. She had this turn in life and was murdered and cut up and put in a cave in the dark for 40 years. Then for another 60 she was in a cupboard, brought out every now and then, presumably to show budding pathology students. I thought, no, no, I'm not having this." She has since praised Dr. Stephen Ledbetter, the senior pathologist at the lab, for his help with finally laying Mammy to rest. Susie later explained what he had said to her. "He told me that he hadn't known what to do with the remains. People were telling him to get rid of them. But he said, 'I don't like doing that because you never know if a relative is going to come forward. And of course, you don't. But in this case, I did.'" Susie, with help from Margaret Headley, a family history researcher, tracked down Mammy's parents' graves in Bishop Wearmouth Cemetery in Sunderland. Mammy was eventually laid to rest with her parents. Susie stated she had been treated with such a lack of dignity, and now she's with her parents. "I'm not religious, but I do feel much better about it now. I'm so glad that Mammy could eventually be laid to rest by a relative, despite the fact that it took almost 100 years. I think using the evidence presented at Shotton's bigamy trial and at the inquest, it's clear that he had something to do with Mammy's murder and was most probably responsible for it. There will of course always be some slight doubt due to the time that elapsed and the fact that Shotton had died at the time of the inquest. The evidence does seem to point strongly at him, however. It's clear that Mammy was treated appallingly and she did not deserve to disappear and be forgotten about. Thanks to Susie and the people who helped her along the way, Mammy has been remembered. I think we should all remember her as the strong-willed, vivacious and fun-loving girl that her friends at the time described her as." Thank you for listening to today's episode. I would really like to hear your thoughts about it, so please do let me know on social media on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. I would like to thank our patrons on Patreon who continue to support the podcast. I really do appreciate it. and I would like to thank David for becoming a new patron. Thanks for being amazing. If you want to support us on Patreon and receive shout-outs, stickers and bonus episodes, you can find the link in the show notes. You can also support the podcast by reviewing it wherever you listen, or just by following us on social media. Thank you to MotoStar81 and Mosh776 for your 5-star reviews this week. You can also go over to our YouTube channel where I upload the audio from the episodes and subscribe to the channel if you get a minute. If you want to send us in any suggestions for cases, please do on social media or at theunseenpod@gmail.com. Thank you for being so patient while I took 2 weeks off. I'm ahead on all episodes now and Patreon bonuses, so it's much appreciated. I just want to take the time to say that I hope everyone is keeping safe and healthy in these hard times at the moment. And thank you again for tuning in. As always, I'm Caprice and this has been Unseen. Thank you.